Disclaimer. This episode of Reservations discusses the 2008 documentary, Dear Zachary, A Letter to a Son About His Father. In this episode, there is talks of murder and suicide. Listener discretion is advised. Hello, everyone, and welcome back to the show. This is Reservations, and I'm Rain Whalen.
And my name is Robert Paulson.
Okay.
Nailed it. High five.
Huh? Okay. Who's Robert Paulson?
You serious? It's from Fight Club, but it doesn't
matter. Oh, okay.
I know, fell completely flat, and I guess that's fitting, so that's
fine. I mean, you know, it's funny what we were literally just talking about off mic, or literally right before we started, of probably there's not going to be virtually any jokes in this episode.
Yeah, it's not going to be a funny one, I'll tell you that.
Yeah.
But that's okay.
Yeah. So, everyone, welcome back to the show. Before we get super into everything, if you heard the disclaimer, which hopefully Future Rain made that point pretty well clear, this episode is going to be a little bit serious and kind of from our tease from last week, venturing into true crime territory. As I told my wife, we probably won't even talk about the movie making aspect of this, more so about the real life events that happened.
I mean, I noticed a few things that I thought were really interesting about his editing style, because all of this, I mean, this movie lives in the editing, right?
Right.
Because I mean, he had to piece it together in a meaningful way, right?
Right.
And have it be emotionally impactful, which of course it is. It's infamous for it.
Yeah. So Jeremy, I don't want to say talking, I guess really breaking down today.
Today we are discussing Dear Zachary, A Letter to a Son About His Father. And so this is the first time for you. Is that correct?
That is 100% correct.
Okay. I remember, I'm beating you to it. I'm just going to tell you the first time I saw it. Okay. So the first time I saw this, it was maybe 2009. It had to have been right around the time it came out. So it came out around 2008. Mm-hmm. And it was on Netflix. Okay. And it was on Netflix for like 10 years after that. Consistently, which is unique. But I remember I was sitting at home. It was sort of similar to the first time I saw like Antichrist, right? I was scrolling through Netflix. It was late. I was in high school. My mom had gone to bed already. And so I was just in the living room going through Netflix, and I was obsessed with documentaries at the time. And as I was a documentary, as I was true crime, I said, okay, let's turn it on. And throughout the course of the film, I had never been so angry and so sad and so upset watching a movie ever. Okay. Ever. Mm-hmm. I've never felt that visceral reaction before. And I'll tell you this, I've seen it a few times. Last night, I got mad again, just the same amount. I would say.
Yeah.
It's a film that is just not fair. The whole thing is just not fair. And you're screaming, you know, at the TV, and you're just so furious, and you feel so terrible for the Bagbys. And I mean, it's like now I feel like I know them because I've seen this a few times. I follow the Facebook group every once in a while. Like every year they'll celebrate Andrew's birthday and Zachary's birthday. And I just feel like I know them, even though I don't. Right.
Yeah.
I had a hard time finding out where they were now last night.
Yeah. I was curious if they were still alive or not.
I was too. And I couldn't find them.
Yeah. Yeah. So, you know, you've picked a lot of films that have crushed me, but nothing like this. I was mad. Like 30 minutes in, I'm like, are you fucking kidding me? And then I was hurt, and then I was mad again. And then, of course, you know, the last 20 minutes crushes me all over again.
Yeah.
And I kept pausing to get some of this out to Ashley. And she was like, well, welcome to the paradox of true crime. She was like, it makes you angry. And I'm like, well,
and what's so unique about this documentary is it's not built like a true crime story. It's not built like a true crime documentary. This isn't Forensic Files, right?
Right.
We're following a genuine friend of the deceased. Okay. Mm-hmm. And he is trying to figure out more about his friend, right? He felt that when talking to people that knew his best friend growing up, that that they were telling him things about him that he didn't know. And so then he just set off on this road trip and set off on making a documentary to selfishly for him, just to try to find out, you know, more about his friend and what else didn't he know and what else could he find out and how could he keep his friend with him through this. Right. So that's something very unique about this is that, and it, I mean, and what, you know, and what a coincidence that this happened to someone who we have decades of footage of, you know, his friend has been making these home movies since they were kids. And it's legit. I mean, these, it's them two making these movies, you know? And, you know, we have so much footage and we have so much backstory. We have this very deep-seated connection between the filmmaker and the subject, right? And so that comes through the film as well. And that's how, that's why you feel like you know them, right? I feel like I know Kate and David, right?
Right.
I don't know Kate and David. But I feel comfortable calling them Kate and David. You see what I'm saying?
No, yeah, like, yeah, absolutely.
It's remarkable. The fact that this film was made by someone very close to the family, no one else could have made a movie like this, right? No one else could have put it together and could have provided you with the information and shown you a life and you care this much. Only someone who knew him could do that.
Yeah, I agree. You know, I'm not to say that other, you know, documentaries are bad, but I think if this story was told from, you know, like trying to think of a company that cranks out documentaries left and right, you know, like a Forensic Files documentary. I don't think it would have, I think it would have been just that, like focusing on the facts and not really who Andrew was.
Because there's a disconnect, right? There's a disconnect with the familiarity, right? And with that emotional component, right? Because they did an episode of Dateline about it.
Really?
You think that's half as good as what this is?
No. Probably not.
Because Keith Morrison doesn't know Andrew Bagby. Keith Morrison doesn't know Kate and David, right?
Right.
And so he's going through what he knows, and he can, you know, he can empathize, right? You know, a horrible tragedy has befell this family on multiple occasions, and you can empathize. But to carry that familiarity and that emotion only Kurt Quain. I don't know how to say his last name. Only he could have done it, right?
Yeah.
And so, okay. Let's talk about just like the bare bones. What really, I think, captures people the most about this film, because I have shown this film to a lot of people, okay?
Mm-hmm.
I think it's just the natural progression of the story, okay?
Right.
Because that in and of itself is unbelievable. It's so tragic, because already it's sad because our filmmaker has lost his best friend, okay?
Mm-hmm.
That's horrible. Yeah.
Yeah.
And then we're having to deal with this disgusting woman in the process. Okay. That's bad enough. But then, you know, it's like, this could only have been real life, because I think if this were anything scripted, it starts to reach unbelievability. It starts to reach this sort of this disbelief that you can't really suspend, you know?
Yeah.
Because it's too much. Because once you find out she's pregnant, you're like, whoa, right? Mm-hmm. Because that seems unlikely. The way he's telling the story, it seems unlikely, right? It seems like there was a real emotional disconnect between Andrew and that horrible woman, Shirley. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
And then when you find out she's pregnant, you're like, what? And you're kind of mad. I was kind of mad at Andrew a little bit. Cause I'm like, dude, she's bad news. And then of course, as it progresses to its horrible finale, that you cannot believe that, you know, like, what are the odds? Right? What are the odds that this could keep getting worse? You know?
Mm-hmm.
And that the Canadian justice system is really this flawed, at least at the time.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think that's what made me mad more than anything. I mean, a lot of the stuff that happens in this makes me mad, but the flawed system, I think, made me mad more than anything.
Mm-hmm.
Especially when we get sort of some catharsis for Kate and David, where an investigation, you know, proves this could have been prevented.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that I was like, you're damn right, it could have been prevented.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's. Yeah, and I agree. It's some parts I'm like, there's no way this actually happened. This is too fantastical.
Mm-hmm.
Too fantastical. There's no way. And then you start doing research and like, oh no, like, yeah, this is exactly how it happened.
Yeah.
Yeah, I agree, man. It's insane that this really happened.
Yeah.
The way Kurt was presenting it.
Mm-hmm. And in you know, it's hard to say. You'd like to think it was sort of, you know, and it was. I mean, he had started these interviews before, you know, Shirley said she was pregnant, right?
Mm-hmm.
And it really did progress like this. Now, the way he does his interviews and the way that, I mean, a lot of these people were interviewed after all of it had happened, right?
Right.
By the time he got to them, it was too late and all of it already transpired. But man, I mean, I can't imagine, you know, going through these, I mean, again, it's the way he puts it together. Okay. He starts off with, let me tell you about Andrew. Okay. And then, of course, you love Andrew, right?
Yeah.
He's a sweetheart, right? Yeah. He's intelligent. He's fun to be around. He's a goofball. And everybody loves him, right? And then he pauses and he goes, hang on. Let me circle back. Here's why I'm making this in the first place. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
That's when we meet Shirley. Okay. And Shirley's pretty bad. We don't like her. Of course, we're not supposed to, and we never will. Right.
Yeah.
But then once we start to get a little bit more of her, and especially after Zachary is born, I mean, dude, when they have to share custody and share time with Shirley to be able to see Zachary, I know I'm skipping a lot of steps here, but I mean, it's infuriating, especially the phone calls. All right. So again, that seems also sort of, if you think about it too much, you're like, wait a minute. Because I think the average person is so appalled at what is going on that they're trying to find ways for it not to be true. Okay. And so you're like, okay, well, how did he get the recordings? This is obviously not true. Right. Kate and David were recording them. And Kurt asked for it. Right.
Yeah.
That's in one of the extended epilogues. On the Blu-ray extra, but where he talks about how he acquired these things and, you know, just, you know, stuff that doesn't need to be in the documentary, but things that probably I should explain, sort of a thing, you know? Go ahead.
No, I was just going to say, So I think much like the documentary, that way we're not kind of all over the place. I think let's circle back. And I think a good place to start, so that way we're not really throwing everyone into this, is with the concept of the documentary, which is Kurt wanting to know more about his best friend. Yeah. You know, and the documentary starts out so with a different tone. Like, yes, there's this looming presence of Andrew's murder. But after Kurt kind of goes through the facts of his murder, we kind of come back to, I wanted to get to know my friend. And the documentary comes back into this very sweet form of storytelling where he's interviewing their childhood friends again and, you know, and decides to plan this massive road trip that's going to take him across another country, and because he just wants to know, you know, things about someone he knew for 22 years, and it never crossed his mind, you know. It's just, so the concept of the documentary is fascinating in and of itself, you know. I mean, I would 100%. I mean, I know you pitched an idea like this to me before. I would 100% do this for you and Alex. But yeah.
Who knows? But I mean, okay. So with these interviews, okay? Kurt has done, I have to say his first name. I know I don't know him, but I can't say his last name. He has done something so amazing that he's able to create and edit together this incredible story and this, and with very unique techniques. Okay. So something will be mentioned and then he'll replay it later because it's a callback to what's now important, right? Do you remember when he said this? Well, now that's important again, right? Or do you remember when she said this, right? And this happens all throughout, okay? He's a master at this. And And it's so, it's so effective, right? Right. Especially editing, cross editing, Kate and David talking about when they found out about Andrew and when they found out about Zachary, right? Mm-hmm. Editing those two things together because they're so similar in the way they told the stories, which of course is on purpose, right?
Mm-hmm.
But also, you know, just to see just, you know, the further devastation that's going on in their lives, right? And the desperation that they had, right? To do things differently, right? To almost make up for, right, what they felt that they didn't do for Andrew at that time, right? Mm-hmm. That they are now doing for Zachary. And it's very impressive and it's very effective. I don't know how he thought of that. You know, even later on when David talks about how he would have killed Shirley, you know,
mm-hmm.
and, you know, it's like, well, then I would have to leave Newfoundland. We'd have to get out. And then they would replay someone saying, you know, the hardest thing about living here in Newfoundland is leaving. Right. And it's a different, she didn't mean it that way, but he's using that, you know, sort of soundbite to mean something different within a different context. And again, he does this throughout the movie. It's very impressive. I don't know. You probably didn't pick up on it because it's your first time and you're too busy crying.
No, I was paying attention.
Right. Most people are too busy the first time just being just struck by this horrible story.
Yeah. Yeah. It's. Yeah. I'm kind of speechless, honestly. So I mean, that's a good transition, to kind of the big chunk of the documentary, which is about Andrew's murder, which is about, you know, and Kurt does such a great job of not only respecting his friend, but giving the audience the facts without kind of overwhelming everyone, you know. Most sort of forensic documentaries or crime shows, or, you know, they give you the facts, but they kind of overwhelm you with all the facts and overwhelm mm-hmm. you with, like, well, then this happened, then that happened. Da, da, da. And I didn't feel like, I felt like Kurt knew how he wanted to present the facts to the audience about mm-hmm. what happened to his best friend.
Well, and he's not this kind of storyteller anyway. Like he's not a documentarian really. Right. He mainly works with fiction. And so since that's not his background, he's not going to do it in the traditional way. He's not going to give you a sort of textbook, crime breakdown of, you know, of the crime and its proceedings. And even the courtroom stuff, is very novice. Right. And, you know, he's saying these things, but I know that, you know, he's not an expert at it, which is fine because I don't need him to be, because I'm not an expert at it. Who cares? What we need to know is that it's slow and it's unfair. Mm-hmm. And that comes across beautifully because he's explaining it to us in a way we understand. Right. I didn't know half the words he was saying when he was reading from a transcript, but I understood that it's painful to be in that situation and know that you're completely, you have no control, right?
Mm-hmm.
And that it seems to be advantageous to the accused and not the victims, right?
Right.
That I got.
Yeah. Yeah. So, and I think you could agree, that's when I first started getting really mad.
Sure.
Because Kurt presents us with all the facts of what happened to Andrew and how, and I'm just going to say this now. I mean, they say it in the documentary, but I 100% believe it. It was 1,000,000% premeditated. Mm-hmm. No ifs, ands, or buts about it. And, you know, we get all the facts of Andrew's premeditated murder by Shirley. And then we just see how the Canadian government drags their feet for, as if I did my math right, for 4 months on just trying to decide how they wanted to proceed with extraditing her right back to the United States.
Right.
And I was so angry. I'm like, the U.S., not government necessarily, but a United States law enforcement agency is accusing this woman of murder, and you are wasting time deciding on how you want to proceed in French or English to extradite her back to the U.S.
Yeah.
So she can face a trial for murdering someone.
Yeah.
And they were splitting hairs over the language.
Sure.
Like it, I've never been so mad.
I know.
In my life.
I know. I understand. It's tough. It's tough to get through. Especially when, you know, again, after Zachary is born, paternity tests prove that it is Andrew's. And of course you wouldn't need it because you just need to look at him. They look exactly the same, which makes it way harder. And so then you're angry because now the Canadian government has allowed Shirley to maintain custody.
Mm-hmm.
And having Kate and David fight and struggle and sacrifice for visitation, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, that was very hard because, you know, you sit there and you listen to these phone calls that they have to have with this woman that killed their son.
Mm-hmm.
And they have to play nice and they have to be polite. They have to negotiate with this woman.
Mm-hmm.
And the things that she's saying are so disgusting and they're horrible. And the audacity of this woman. She has no, she has no awareness at all. She's a complete narcissist. And a sociopath. She's horrible. And to hear David be very calm on the phone and to be very direct. Thank God he was in the military. Thank God he has that discipline. Thank God. Because everyone else in the interview, so like, I don't know how they did it. You know?
Yeah. You know, I was going to wait, but I mean, big, big, amazing props to Kate and David, man. They handled not one, but two devastating tragedies with grace, with just nerves of steel. And it just, it sucks that it didn't pay off for them, you know?
Right. Because they deserve all the happiness in the world. They're amazing people, right?
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, just the, you know, the way we're being shown, the way that they're being treated, of course, was just horrible by the court system and by the Canadian government. And especially by Shirley, because Shirley is not being kind. But because she's not. But we get this, and again, no one could have written it any better. You know, that there is a sense in this moment of levity where they get to keep Zachary for a while.
Mm.
And while Shirley's in jail, they get to keep him. And then everyone is so overjoyed. Everyone gets to go visit him. They, you know, lots of pictures, lots of video, you know, lots of, Zachary gets lots of gifts, lots of, I mean, it's amazing, right? And
right.
This part of the documentary is, I think, what makes the rest of it so horrible.
Yeah.
Because we get to see what it would be like if they had him forever, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And then when Kurt gets to go visit, you know, it's just wonderful and it's sweet. By the way, Kurt doing the narration is perfect.
Yeah.
And we'll get to that in a minute, but, there are moments in his narration that, I mean, just break you down.
Yeah.
Anyway, so, when they get Zachary, you think that we're good, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And then they let her back out. God knows why. And then, you know, they have to do this whole thing over again, right? But not only while they had, you know, of course, you know, like Kurt says in the documentary, you know, Zachary came with strings attached. You know, it's not like they get to have him and it's good and it's whatever. They still had to go visit her, you know, once a week. Was it once a week? It may have been more than once a week.
Yeah, a weekly visit.
And, you know,
I think it was a weekly visit, if I remember, and a daily phone call.
Okay. And, you know, driving 2 hours in horrible weather, right? Because as they said, and again, they reiterated that, you know, the weather is horrible. It's like mm-hmm. 8 months of winter and the rest are bad weather. And, you know, they fought through it. They did it, right? They never missed. They never missed a phone call because they're amazing people. And they knew that if they fought the system even a little bit, they'd lose him. And so they did what they had to keep him safe. Right.
Yeah. Yeah. And, you know, and they aligned themselves with so many fantastic people who were going to fight for Zachary and were trying to fight.
Yeah.
You know, their lawyer, Jackie, Brazil, awesome last name.
Yeah.
You know, and Jackie was doing everything she could to just, you know, just help. And Kurt, I like that Kurt edited this part. We knew things were about to go downhill when David says, and then things got weird.
Mm-hmm.
And as soon as he said that, I was like, yeah. No. And, you know, we get these phone calls where she's like, where Shirley is just like, I feel like he loves you two more than me. You know, I'm just worried I'm not going to be able to take care of him. And, you know, trying to goad David and Kate into talking about Andrew's case. And it just, it...
Casually, like talking about Zachary's hair and was it like Andrew's and all that. I mean, it's unbelievable. And you're furious, you know, you're just as mad as they are and, you know, rightfully so. And even when she's like, you know, maybe we can gift Zachary a picture of, you know, of Andrew and me and all that. I'm like, what is Matt, you know, again, zero self-awareness. Zero social awareness. She's a narcissist. She's a monster. And
yeah.
And yeah, you're right. I mean, you know, just the audacity. And honestly, the thing that made me the most mad about those interactions was she kept calling them babysitters. And that was driving me insane.
Yeah. No,
she's like, well, you know, you're babysitting. And, you know, I thank you for baby, whatever. It's like, dude,
those are raising his. Yeah, those are his biological grandparents.
Yeah.
Fucking.
Oh, dude, I know. So to lead into Zachary's death, which is, I think the, you know, it's obviously the peak of this film and why it's so, so horribly tragic and so sad. And it breaks everyone down. I haven't met someone who's watched it that isn't just, you know, affected by it, right?
Yeah.
When we lead up to Zachary's death, I mean, you can feel Kurt in his narration, you know, and of course you can hear him break, you know, he's crying while he's reading it. He did the same for Andrew. And this is probably the only thing I didn't like about the documentary is sort of this, his editing and the sound design of the loud screeching and the screaming. You know, it was a lot, right?
Yeah.
And, you know, it's sort of loud. But of course it's supposed to, you know, it's a representation of how everyone's feeling at that time. Of course, it's just rage and it's unbelievable sadness and it's unbelievable grief. Right. But mostly rage. Yeah. Right. And then to hear Kate, we'll get to, we need to talk more about Kate and David, but hear Kate and David talk about it, you know, I cannot believe they're able to. It's, you know, the same with Andrew. That's all I was thinking about was I cannot believe you're able to talk about it. How can you be coherent? You know, they are just they're amazing people. I don't know how they could handle any of this. I didn't know how they could handle it before Zachary died.
Right? Yeah. Yeah. So I'm going to be honest. Right before we get to that, right before we realize that, you know, Zachary's been killed, I was curious. I was like, okay, if he was one by 2003, maybe, you know, he's 21 or 23 by now, you know, I wonder what's up with that. And I had looked it up. I was like, this can't be real. And it happened on the, and I fucking lost it. Like not out of sadness, but yeah, out of rage. And I fucking paused and yelled from the living room into the bedroom and told Ashley. And she was like, that's just awful. And I was like, you don't even know the fucking half of it.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, the first time I saw it, I couldn't believe it. Yeah, I didn't see it coming at all, right?
Mm-hmm.
It was one of those where, I mean, this documentary is sort of set up to where you don't really know what's going to happen because we've had the rug pulled from under us a few times already. So it's like, I don't know where this is going, right? And when Zachary dies, you're in disbelief and you can't. I mean, I was like, I'm misunderstanding the documentary. Like something is going on and I must not have understood because there's no way that that's right.
Yeah.
And they, you know, I'm already in denial because I like there's no way, you know. And I really felt for Miss Brazil because she's the one who had to tell them.
Yeah.
And I don't know how she's telling the story either. I guess it's because I'm in this headspace where I've never experienced something so horrible that I am assuming that sort of, you know, rage and sadness lasts forever, which it does, but I guess in manageable pieces after a while.
Mm-hmm.
But this wasn't that long afterward when he was making this. You know, yeah. We're talking maybe 5 years. No, not even five. You know, we're talking three to like 4 months. Years.
I thought it was like months.
I think it's 3 to 4 years when he was making the documentary. Oh, I guess it would be months.
Because we're watching it in real time.
Right.
As he's making it, and maybe
a year after. I don't think it was so soon when he was interviewing him. Maybe.
Well, yeah, because, you know, the investigation that the Canadian government did, I think, was a couple months, I think, to a year later.
Mm-hmm. So it probably was a year or two afterward, but I mean, it's still unbelievable. I mean, again,
yeah.
the way I felt watching it, I had never felt that way watching a movie before. It was just new territory. I didn't know what to do with myself. I was so angry, and so sad. And again, it was just complete disbelief, that I was, again, even more, I was, went from, you know, denial to bargaining. I go, there's no way this is true. Then this is all made up, you know?
Yeah.
I didn't have a smartphone back then, but I would have looked it all up if I had a smartphone.
yeah.
But then I was like, I guess it has to be true, but it's too horrible. It's too awful and I can't handle it. You know?
Okay, let's switch gears just for a second, because you said you wanted to talk about Kate and David.
I think that they're incredible people. And I know that, you know,
100%.
I don't know them, right? Again, it feels like I do. Yeah. But the way that people talk about them and the way that they're represented in the documentary, and I don't think it's not disingenuous. I think they are really phenomenal people. I think that they are genuinely nice, caring, wonderful people. The way they 100%. Interact with Zachary, right? Oh, I mean, who could ask for better grandparents? You know, they're so sweet and so loving and so caring and so nice. I love that, you know, people around Newfoundland were like, they made friends immediately. You know,
like, yeah,
they had friends the day one. You know,
yeah. Yeah, I love that couple. The husband was like, you know, I've been here all my life, and I'm pretty sure they have more friends than me.
Yeah, and you can see why.
Yeah,
you can see why they have more friends than you. You know, because they're just genuinely wonderful.
Yeah, and I do love that Kurt takes time to give us more information about Kate and David, how their relationship started, who they were before they were parents and then grandparents. Because again, you're right. You know, Kurt is, I mean, as we see, you know, Kurt sees them as his parents as well, you know, and they mean so much to him, and all their childhood friends of Andrew's and Kurt's, they mean so much,
right.
You know? I love that Kurt spent so much time with Kate and David, that they weren't just sort of like a footnote in this documentary. No, of course not.
They're the heart of it. They're everything. Yeah. They are the foundation of this documentary is Kate and David. And again, it's so unbelievable that the filmmaker has known them his whole life. Mm-hmm. You know, that makes a huge difference. I mean,
100%.
It's just one of these films that just, it has the perfect ingredients for how to convey emotion and how to show this sort of familiarity, right? It's remarkable. And good for him for not stopping, because in one of the, in the epilogue, he did stop, for a while.
Yeah. And the closing few minutes of the documentary, you know, as he's still writing to Zachary, you know, he said that I almost wanted to give up on this.
Yeah.
Because he was making this for Zachary.
Right.
And there was no point to continue on if Zachary was never going to get to see this. And then this is what broke me. This is what made me sob for a good 10 minutes. Is his pivot to finish it because it's for Kate and David. And that's what broke me. I jokingly told everyone at work today, I was like, yeah, this will probably be the first episode I cry on camera, but nah, I think I'll be fine.
Yeah, we'll make it through, I think.
But yeah, I sobbed uncontrollably, especially when he went through this montage of all of Andrew's childhood friends, you know, Kate, you know, saying, Kate, David, we love you. You're like parents to us. We will always love you. You still, you know, I was just broken.
Yeah.
Because it's just, it's overwhelming in a good way, mm-hmm. The amount of love and support that people still have for them.
Yeah.
And, you know, want justice for not only Andrew, but for Zach.
Mm-hmm.
And or Zachary, and I think that's what broke me down
mm-hmm.
so much. And of course, my wife was like, "Are you crying?" I was like, "Yes, I'm crying.
Yeah,
like I'm not ashamed." Because Kate and David, again, as we've been saying, you know, they had to live through two of the most traumatic things that anyone has to go through, but they did it with grace, with determination. And of course, you know, now, you know, they became activists and something did come out good of this, you know, the Zachary bill, I mm-hmm. believe is what it's called,
mm-hmm.
that protects children from shit like this.
Yeah, for it's they had. All right. So this is a good transition to like the epilogue, which is, you know, he was talking about, OK, well, what happened after I finished? Well, here's what happened after I finished. We pitched it to lots of film festivals. A lot of them turned them down. Sundance being one of them.
No shit.
And there was another one. I forgot what it's called. I'm sorry, but it was created in the 90s to take the film Sundance Passed On.
Mm-hmm.
And so they took them, right? Mm-hmm. The Canadian Film Festival said no to.
Slam Dance.
There it is, Slam Dance.
Yeah, I looked it up.
Thank you. And so they got their shot there. They were the first film ever to be shown on MSNBC for MSNBC films. So they picked them up for TV broadcasting. They showed it. They rented out a theater to show to the Canadian Parliament, which is, oh, it was like 141 people and only three showed up.
I read that only the MP, I don't know what MP stands for, but one of the MPs of the Canadian Parliament, when he saw it, he was the one who implemented the Zachary bill.
Yeah. And he said, listen, get me 141 copies of this movie and I'm going to show it to them. I'm going to send it to all of them. And even in the lobby after the film, they were talking about it. And they said, well, unfortunately, it violates rights to say absolutely no bail if you're convicted of first degree murder. Like that violates judge. It was like violates judges, like right to deliberate or something. It was something like, you know, it violated the judge's rights. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Because now he or she has no ruling power, or no deliberating power, whatever. And so, but when they put that amendment where they're like, okay, well, what if it's, if the convicted or the charged person for first degree murder just can't like have any interaction with children under 18. And they said, okay, we can run with that. And that's essentially what Zachary's bill is.
Yeah. Yeah. Cause
I mean, I yada through a lot. It took a lot to get to that point. And by that time, not only did the documentary come out and a whole bunch of people saw it, but the Dateline had already come out too. And so a few people of Parliament saw that as well.
Yeah. Which is insane to me. Cause you know, it's openly said in the documentary by David, which is, how can a accused premeditated murderer be let out on bail? Mm-hmm. And furthermore, be allowed to have custody of a child.
Right.
And, you know, and I love that in the investigation, one of the top sentences was, you know, after reviewing all the documents and having her post bail twice, this could have been prevented. Zachary would still be alive.
Yeah, definitely. And the way that Kurt weaves in, okay, I told you about what Shirley did the night before. Let me give you more context, right? Mm-hmm. And then he goes deeper into the details of how she was acting, what the other guy thought. The other guy did call the police, but he didn't leave his name. So no action was, so she was already a threat right there. Right.
Mm-hmm.
And then she called him like 100 times, you know?
Yeah.
And so she was acting erratic and she was dangerous. You know, again, and then giving more context to, here's what she's done in the past also. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it's a similar pattern. And he kept, every time he introduced a new detail, he edited in him reading that, although I'm not going to get it perfectly right, but although the crime was violent, it was specific in nature, right?
Yeah,
and
that's exactly it.
And so of course that's not true, right? Because she has a pattern of this, and if you had just looked mm-hmm. a little bit into it, you would have found that, right?
Yeah, like that. While she was in jail, she was put on suicide watch.
Right.
And nothing came of that.
Every 15 minutes. Right.
Yep.
She was not only a danger to herself, but others while she was in jail. Mm-hmm. And again, that didn't matter. And that's why, Zachary's dead.
Yeah.
And you know, it's devastating. But there is that silver lining that, you know, the bill did get passed and it is a law and it, you know.
Yeah. Still yeah. Cause it, yeah. You know, it's one of those things where great, we have some sort of resolution now. It just sucks that mm-hmm. this didn't exist to save the person that's inspired, you know, the person that's inspired. Sorry if anyone hears that. But yeah, it just like, I did feel appreciative, of Kate and David because they didn't give up, you know,
right.
as we hear from them at the beginning of the documentary that they were fully ready to, I don't want to say it. Cause I don't want to ask to get in trouble, but they're ready to, join Andrew after they confirmed that it was him.
Yeah.
But I'm so grateful that they didn't. And yes, that meant they had to live through another, awful tragedy, but they didn't give up, you know, like I actually clapped when they said that they called Jackie to do a press conference, and Jackie, you know, of course wanted them to, but I was like, you know, we can't right now. I'm sorry. And David pretty much said, nope, we're doing it anyway. I don't care. And I audibly clapped. And I was like, because they're trying to, you know, the Canadian government was trying to silence them. And they're like, no, because of you, our grandson's dead.
Right.
And it's so I'm so appreciative that they didn't follow through, that they decided to keep going. And again, like I said, they became activists and doubled down on that. This will not happen again.
Well, and here's a good transition into positive unintended consequences of this documentary. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
So not only did Kurt get tons of feedback, you know, emails, letters, especially when he was trying to finish the movie, right? He ran out of money. So he put out this, you know, some ads and showed it to a few people, what he had, a rough cut, and explained, like, in writing what he was trying to accomplish and what the story was and what it was about. And he said it was like the end of It's a Wonderful Life, where just letters flooded in with checks and with money and helping him fund the rest of it, right? So, but here are some things that he didn't think about. So once the movie had aired and once it had been in theaters and on TV and all that stuff, he started getting all of these emails and these letters from people who said, hey, I was thinking of ending my life, and this stopped me from doing that. This movie stopped me from doing that. Either because of Kate and David, they said that, you know, if Kate and David can make it through this, I can make it through what I'm going through, right? So they're a positive example of determination and perseverance, right? But what I thought was more interesting and more fascinating was people said, hey, I was thinking of ending my life, but then I saw what the impact of one person had on all of these people. And it made me appreciate what sort of impact I'm making on all of these people, and I just don't know it, right? I think that is one of the underrated aspects of this film, is it shows what one person can make a difference in someone's life, right? Because we didn't just have five or six people talk about Andrew, right?
Yeah.
We had so many people talk about Andrew. And in the epilogue, they would do these movie screenings with Kate and David, and Kurt at the end of the film would say, hey, if you knew Andrew, would you stand up, please? And at least three, four people would stand up. These people were traveling to go see these, go see these screens because he knew Andrew. Right.
Yeah. Yeah. I jokingly texted you today, told you I was mad at you. And yes, the film crushed me. You know, I don't think I've ever been that wrecked emotionally in a film. Well, at least a documentary. Guardians 3 really fucked me up.
Jesus
too.
Christ.
I was so raw, like, that I had to distract myself. But, you know, sitting with everything that I experienced today, last night, like what I experienced last night, sitting with it today, you know, again, like I said, you know, I think Kate and David are wonderful human beings. There will never be two people like them ever again. I hate the fact that they had to live through two completely separate but also very identical tragedies. But I'm so glad that they didn't give up.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it's great that so many people were touched by this, like what you were saying with people who reached out to Kurt and told him, like, if they can do it, I can do it, mm-hmm. you know? And you're right, you know, because what's funny is, you know, they say that in the documentary. You think that one person's death only affects like a few people, and it affects everyone. Mm-hmm. And so having Kurt make such a positive impact for one film just about his best friend to affect all these other lives has just been, that's really great to hear. It kind of makes me now want Ashley to see it, even though I know it will absolutely devastate her too.
I mean, she has a leg up. I mean, she knows what to expect. I mean, it's still going to hit her pretty hard, but yeah. At least she has some sort of warning. Unlike the rest of us.
Yeah. yeah. Well, buddy, what else did we want to mention?
I honestly didn't have too much else. I love this film. I've seen it more than once. I think that's probably unusual. But I think it's just so well crafted. And I think it's so well mm-hmm. put together. And, you know, I wouldn't say like I miss them, you know, but I do think, I mean, probably, I don't know, once or twice a year, I'll think about them, you know, which is weird because I don't know them. but this film makes me feel like I do. And it's because of Kurt's filmmaking. And it's because of Kurt's emotional attachment and his physical relationship. I mean, his relationship with them, you know, he physically knew them. It's so crazy. Again, I think, you know, I don't know why I think it's so crazy, you know, like what are the odds that this person is connected to this other person who was murdered, that knew how to make films, that knew how to put it together. And then it just happened to unfold in this unbelievable tragedy. You know,
mm-hmm.
what are the odds?
You know, and something that I forgot about, you know, Kurt is the one who told Kate and David, you still have children,
yeah.
and gave them that clock that says you still have children. I'm going to be honest. It took me longer while I was watching it to put two and two together. Mm-hmm. I was like, oh, that's nice. And then towards the end, I was like, Kurt did that. And it's just, yeah, it is very serendipitous that this family's son's best friend happened to be so passionate about film and decided to do this, you know.
And what I think, you know, what's the perfect ending is that, you know, and again, it's the way he put it together. The editing is just masterful. But at the end, they all were like, oh, and he talked about you a lot, you know?
And that got me, dude, that got me too, bro.
Yeah. He really loved you. And he talked about you all the time, you know, Jesus, man, you know?
Yeah. Dude.
Because it brings it back to the full circle of why he made it in the first place is it was his best friend, you know?
Yeah.
And yes, Andrew had lots of best friends, but he never forgot Kurt, you know, and he would mention Kurt even in Met. Oh my God. Like that hit me pretty hard.
Yeah. This broke me. But yeah, it's still fantastic. It's definitely going to be, I would be willing to rewatch it. Obviously not so soon.
Probably.
Because I meant to say this at the top of the show, but you know, everyone, if you can't find it on Blu-ray, it is on Prime right now. I don't know for how long, but it is on Prime. So if anyone is interested, you can watch it on Prime. Supposedly, the Legacy documentary that Kurt did is for free on YouTube, which is sort of like a follow-up. Mm-hmm. I think. Kind of like the epilogues that you were talking about.
Yeah, the epilogue was only 15 minutes, so it wasn't too long.
Yeah. But yeah, it's, I don't think I've ever seen a documentary like this. And again, all the points we've been making is because it was made by someone who knew the deceased and did this out of love. Like, yes, I'm sure somewhere deep down, Kurt probably wanted justice for Andrew and Zachary, but this was all based on love, not like, well, I'm going to present the facts and I'm going to get justice. This was no, let me tell you about this person that I love. And let me tell you about his family. And it's just, it was so good.
Yeah.
And yeah. Yeah. Oh, buddy. Are you ready to wrap up?
Yeah. Yeah. It's a wonderful story. In a tragic story, but I hope one day I can find out what happened to Kate and David. I tried last night and I had a hard time. Apparently Kate and David Bagby are pretty common names. So if you just look up, you know, what they're, I mean, a lot of it is the documentary and a lot of that does pop up. His book is, you know, Dance with the Devil pops up and, but not really some current information. So I hope they're okay. Or if not, you know, I hope, you know, that it was peaceful.
Yeah. Well, and honestly, if they are still alive, again, I hope they're doing well as well. But I think they've earned some anonymity.
I agree. Know.
But. Well, buddy, are you ready to hear what we're going to talk about next week?
Yeah.
So next week, going over my list, I realized because I needed something a little bit lighter, a little something, you know.
Not
there's
hard.
Only one thing. There's only one thing left on here that's a little bit lighter. But I've done two movies that I've already seen back to back, and I don't want to just snowball into a bunch of the films that I haven't seen yet.
Okay.
So next week we are going to be discussing a movie that I haven't seen yet.
Okay.
I've seen bits from, but I haven't seen it in its entirety. Next week will be our first anime film. Widely considered one of the best anime films ever made. Next week, we are talking about Akira.
Okay.
I told you about this movie because being an anime fanatic myself, I was like, dude, you should see it. And I've never seen it. And I own it right here. But I've seen scenes and I know what it's about, but
sure.
Dedicating time to actually sit and watch it, I've never done. Mm-hmm. So yeah.
Cool.
Akira.
All right. That'd be fun. We'll see.
Yeah. I mean, not as light as I wanted, but you know what?
I don't think we're going to get to that. So I think you're okay.
Yeah. The only light movie probably won't be till later. So.
Yeah, probably not.
But yeah. Well, everyone, we hoped you took something away from Dear Zachary. Definitely check it out, get it physically or watch it on Prime. And we will see you next week for Akira.